Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. It's Tuesday, and you know what that means.
I do. Ladies free before midnight, two for one after.
That's right, fellas. Bottle service available right now. Tables are going quickly. Also, it's a new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
Hard bottoms only.
How was your week?
My week was good. It started off shitty because, a few weeks ago, we talked about this on the podcast. We were down at South by Southwest, and we had to rush to get an Airbnb.
Yeah. We wanted to beat the snowstorm to get down to Austin, and our hotel could not accommodate us a day before, so you went online and got
an Airbnb. And every Airbnb always has one weird thing about it. This one had everything weird about it, and
yeah,
we talk about this in the other episode.
Q-tips, used Q-tips on the floor, coins in the sink.
It felt like the house was going to fall over. Like, it just was not a good situation.
Right.
But I went on a week later, and I said, hey, didn't have a great experience.
You said
I want my money back.
To Airbnb,
yeah.
Not to the person.
No, I said to Airbnb, and so 2 weeks later, I got a phone call back, and they asked for my story, and I said I had a really bad experience with Airbnb. We didn't even stay the night. I would like a refund of some sort.
Yeah.
And they said, well, it's too late for us to refund you, but what we can do is you have to go into basically a mediation with the renter.
Which means what?
Which means that I need to send any pictures I have of the property, and I need to write up a thing saying, I didn't stay the night.
And this is why my experience was...
And this is how much money I'd like back.
Okay.
So I do that, and...
How do you do this? Is there like a program, or you actually like on the phone with them?
No, it's through their... I mean, I told the representative.
Yeah, no,
on
no
the
but
phone,
how are you talking to the person?
So there's a thing on their app or whatever where you have to literally type out your experience.
Yeah. So it's like a dialogue box.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I write out that I had a shitty experience, blah, 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 blah. And the guy hits me back, and I asked for, it was $345 for the Airbnb for the night, and I asked for $300 back because that's the amount that you're able to do.
That's fine.
He hits me back with a message that says that this is defamation and that I should pay him $1,000.
$1,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was like, well, no.
Yeah.
And then had to argue it down from giving him $1,000 to back to giving me money. And at the end of it, I was like, well, fuck it. I'm not going to argue. Like, literally sitting on my computer for an entire night arguing with somebody I don't know.
Was not what you wanted to do?
And, I didn't even stay in his house.
Right.
And he wanted me to give him $1,000 for defamation for telling Airbnb that I didn't stay in his house because it was dirty.
You owe him $1,000.
Well, no. So I ended up walking away and just being like, fuck it. Like,
we paid $345.
We both agreed that we did not enjoy this experience.
Me and you, or me and the other guy?
Me and the other guy.
Or you and the other guy?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So now what?
So now...
We can never go back to Austin?
Yeah. That's what I had to tell you.
Fuck. I don't even know. How did you respond when he was like, yeah, $1,000?
I said, I'm going to start over. I don't think that you understand what happened here.
All right. Well, today on the podcast, in better news, DJ K Slay.
DJ K Slay, who I'm sure would be a great person to stay with if he put his apartment up for Airbnb. He came over. He was incredible.
Yeah. Well, so if there's anyone who doesn't know him off jump, he's a legendary graffiti writer. He's a legendary mixtape DJ. He's been on Hot 97 and Shade 45 for the longest time. He's worked with every artist you can think of, has stories on this podcast with every artist you can think of.
Yeah, like has the best leather collection.
Well, even beyond that, the man has a great sense of humor.
Which I was surprised about.
Well, and one thing we did not get to get into with him was that our first rap group was called
the Purchase Street Sweepers.
Because we grew up on Purchase Street, and his crew was the Street Sweepers. So
yes.
Purchase Street Sweepers. Should we have brought it up with him?
Well, we did off mic.
Yeah, we took a picture with him downstairs and mentioned. And the greatest thing is making Casey laugh. So we make him laugh a whole bunch. He tells a whole lot of great stories.
Yo.
I honestly don't know which one's my favorite. Do you have one?
The Jay-Z stuff is amazing. The Kanye stuff is amazing.
There's a lot of great stories
in
here.
But also, like, even before that, his graffiti stuff is awesome.
Here's someone who has been at the center of hip-hop culture, honestly, from the late 70s, early 80s, all the way to today. And that's no exaggeration. So it was a pleasure to sit down with him. When do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Push Your Shit Back, a.k.a. The Plunger.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Always On Fire, a.k.a. Arson Daily.
And it's DJ K. Slate, a.k.a. Slap Your Favorite DJ in the building.
Yeah, and this is a waste of time, but it's the real. Slay.
What's up, man?
Welcome to the Upper West Side.
Oh, man, it's an honor to be here. You know, Upper East Side.
Yeah.
Upper East.
Yeah.
I got a problem with the West.
So listen, we grew up on your shows. You are an institution. You're a legend. And for as many DJs as we've had on here, and we've had a lot, you might be the interview that we're most excited for. It's an honor to have you here.
Oh, man, thank you. It's definitely an honor to be here as well. You know, I like to do interviews with people who have knowledge of the culture, you know, not just culture vultures. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure.
And there's so many of them out here that they just try to find a way to capitalize off the culture but don't care about it. But when you got people that really know about it and know who's who and what's what, that means they had to do their homework on it.
For sure.
So that means it means something. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
I mean, you're talking to two nerds, so yeah.
So it's funny because we have all these books around, and one of my favorites is that Martha Cooper book up there.
Okay.
Which you are featured in, and there's pictures of you at the train yard between like two trains throwing up something.
Okay.
And you know, we've had, and I was telling you outside, we had Bobby Trends on recently.
Yeah.
And we had Cass One on here recently.
Okay.
And both those guys would tell us that they would run in the tunnels and they would hang off the sides of buildings. But when it comes to graffiti, you are a legend. And
yeah.
And you went by Dez.
Yeah.
How did you get into graffiti and how did you end up being like the king of the one and the three line?
So the funny thing about it was, you know, I'm from Spanish Harlem, and there was a lot of gangs around there. And one of the popular gang members, you know, from the Renegades of Harlem, his name was Sly 108, T.S., which he was one of the kings of the 6 Train back in the 70s. He also wrote MC 324. Like, he was a king. And, you know, so, and David lived in, you know, Franklin Plaza. I'm from East River, so he would come through and he'd have his gang colors on. You know, growing up in the hood, that was the coolest thing to us because
what were the gang colors?
They had rich, huh?
What were the colors?
Like, all right, you seen the Warriors?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's how New York gangs did. Instead of like the cut off jean jackets,
right,
with the, you know, the velvet on the back with the letters ironed on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I would see him and be like, damn man, like he's tough.
Yeah.
But outside of that, that's Sly 108. Like, I never knew that was him. I just knew him. But one day I seen him doing a handball court and I'm like, man, like, why is he painting on the, like, you understand? Like, it's a gangster, you know what I'm saying? But then I came to find out that that came with the culture as well, you know, putting your name mark in your territory and everything. So he had this S, and we all did that S in school, you know, the 6 sticks.
Yeah.
Connect them.
Yeah.
I seen him do that one time. And I remember going to school and doodling on paper and practicing that S. And, you know, then I start practicing other letters. And then, you know, I wind up not doing no work the whole class. So I'm drawing and everything. And that's really the way I really like looking at Sly 108, looking at his pieces. And then seeing the other graffiti artists in my neighborhood, like Spec 108 and Part, you know, Part, TDS, Dev Squad, and Zero. You know, Z-Rock the house. It was just different guys who had these pieces all over my neighborhood, and I just got intrigued by it. And I said, man, I want to do that. And I just, you know, would practice and draw. And I never forget the first time I actually did a piece. I brought 2 spray cans from Woolworth, you understand? And that was like the, you know, the neighborhood spot where you went and got everything, like the Acme of back in the days. And went in the back of the schoolyard, and you know, the piece was horrible. Like, it was really disgusting, but to me, it meant everything.
Yeah.
Like, where'd you do, like, it?
It was back on 146. It was a school that I went to. It was an elementary school. I wasn't going there then.
Yeah.
Older, but back at elementary school facing the FDR Drive, I went there. So that was between 146 and 99, which was on 100th Street. FDR Drive, those are my 2 little testing grounds for me perfecting my craft. When I got paint, I would go over there in those schoolyards and practice.
Yeah. Were you tagging Spade at that point?
Yeah, my first tag was Spade.
And that was because of the Black Spades, or
Yeah, the gang. Yeah. I used to idolize them, so I used to write Spade. And then it also was an older cat in my neighborhood named Spade that was a basketball player. You know what I'm saying? Rest in peace. He was really, really nice. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And he got killed by the police. You know, police. They said he fell off the roof, but you know how things happen.
Right.
Yeah. But long story short, yes, I kind of idolized. It was a combination of both of them, and then I kind of wanted a shorter name because, you know, Spade was five letters. So I went with Z-E-L, like Zell, because I used to rock Cazelles all the time, even up to now.
Yeah.
So I went with Zell, like, you know, so I was tagging that for a while. And I kind of wanted a awkward name, you know, something that, like, the Z is the most complicated letter in the alphabet. I think it might be Z and the letter Q.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just judging off of Scrabble rules, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I went with, you know, I took the D and the E off of Spade because I like the letter D and the E, and I just took the Z and I put it, and I said, Dez. I said, yeah, that go, yeah, Dez, and Disaster, Desi Dez, Design. I was like, yeah, I could play with that.
Yeah.
And I just went with Dez. And I remember just the first time I went to the train yard.
Yeah, which train yards were you going to?
All right, the first time I went to the tunnel, I almost died.
Oh, the one God. That's first, on 137.
Hold on, first I got to tell y'all the craziest story. The first time I went on the subway to tag up, I was running with a guy named Fed One. He was a TCP, it was a crazy partner. It was Fed One, it was Mace, CR3. It was a bunch of guys from the east side. And I was 14 years old. And we went motion tagging. That's like, when, you know, that's what toys do. Like, you know what I'm saying? You get on the subway and you write. You're not going to the layup, or you get off and you write on the platform. And we went to 143rd Street, man. And it's so funny. Like, I got caught. Like, it was so funny because I wrote Spade and I wrote it so crazy and it was dripping. And when I turned around, the cops was on my back. And he was like, why you do that? And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, how old are you? I was like 14. He pulled out the cuffs. He cuffed me. Cuffed CR3. Fed didn't tag. He let him go. So they took him to 180th Street. I was 14. My mother came to get me. So the funny thing was, he couldn't read what I tagged. So he put me down as Space TBA Press. I wrote Spade TFA Press. So I was like, okay, good. I can still. So that kind of made me stop for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, my mother was cursing me out. What are you doing? You cut from school. You got caught. And
were you an only child?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was the only child. And then what happened was, once I got to junior high school 13, I got a little nicer with drawing, and, you know, the pieces in the schoolyard was looking crazier and everything. So
So you knew you had to give the world, like, you couldn't hold back from the world.
Yeah, I couldn't.
These,
you know,
masterpieces, yeah.
But my thing was, you know what? I got caught doing some stupid shit. Mm-hmm. Like that tagging. I said, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I want to do the more artistic, because I felt I was talented. And I remember Fed One, I had went to, when I left junior high school 13 was nice. But back then, it wasn't about who the best teachers was and the best grades. It's like, where the bitches was at.
Yeah.
So they were like, Charles Edmund Hughes had the bitches.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to Charles Edmund Hughes. And that's when Fed One introduced me to a guy named Poor One, which was one of our partners. He lived up in Harlem River. Harlem River Project is over the number 3 yard.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yo, he got the 3 yard in check, this and that. He a real good dude. I'm like, word? So we kicked it for a little while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, we made dates to go up there. Mm-hmm. But before we made dates to go up there, we went to the 6th tunnel. Now this time I almost died. Oh, this was, and I almost quit again because
but you almost got quit.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you go in the tunnel, anybody knows when you paint, when they lay the trains up in the tunnel, you stand on the front of the platform. Now, I can say it now because this shit don't exist anymore.
You're not still running up in the tagging trains?
Never, ever. It's a felony now. You know what I'm saying? Word. But it's like you got to stand on the front of the platform and wait for the train to come. When the train comes, as soon as the train takes out the station, then you jump on the tracks and you start proceeding to the middle of the tunnel where the train is laid up at.
Mm-hmm.
So you're waiting for the train to go by because you don't want to go down when I don't know what the fuck was going on that day. I could curse, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I don't know what the fuck was going on that day. But anyway, once the train went through, all right, we jump on the tracks. We get about 10 steps and somebody says, train. So we look, it's another train coming. And this is my first time on the track, so I didn't know how to, you know, they got these blocks. Like I didn't know how to run on them, and I trip.
Oh.
And I hear niggas laughing, you know, because, you know, it was like, you're like, you're on your own when you were there. I trip, and I'm laying there, and the light is getting closer and closer. So eventually, say I'm here, the train stops here for the station.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just like out of away. It. It just says, yo, get the fuck up. Like, because I just froze up. Like, my first time, I fell, you know what I'm saying? I'm dazed, and I just got up and just hopped in the middle and start running, and I caught him. I was like, yo, why you here? He was like, yo, help you. Like, fucking train coming. Like, and they was all laughing at me. I said, man, do I want to really do this shit? Like, it was like, do I want to do it? But I still stayed and painted. I did a Zell piece. You're supposed to hit the window down. I was below the window, so when that shit pulled up the first time, everybody was laughing, and I was like, okay, don't worry about it. Now I know I got to reach the window. Yeah, like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And, that's when I scheduled to go to the 3 yard with Paul One. And Paul One just knew a little more about how, like, he was more instructive to me
mm-hmm.
on what to do. Like, I may have been more talented than him,
mm-hmm.
but he was more instructive. And that's when we first did I did a Dez piece, and it was real, real cold. And I got a picture of it, too. And then I did a Dez and a Paul piece. And then we came back the next week and did a Dez, Paul, and Mace One. And then it just was like, it's Harlem River. So I'm coming from the east side to the west side. You know, I bring a change of clothes, and then I get out. I go to his house. He let me change my clothes, and I come back, you know, because I want my grandparents and them knowing that, you know, I'm out.
Even though you right still now. Reek of aerosol. And
yeah, like, you know, exactly.
Your hands weren't covered with paint?
But they, you know, nobody was really, as long as my clothes was, they wasn't really paying too much attention, man. And that just turned into a habit to every day.
What hours are we talking about at night?
Well, this is the crazy thing. At nighttime, it could be like anytime after 9, 10 o'clock. But on the weekend, it was crazy because the 3 yard is this giant handball court right there. And we'd be down there 12 noon, 1 in the afternoon. And, you know, people would be coming, looking. I'd be like, yo, get the fuck away from the fence because you're making us hot. They're like, why are they looking at the trade? Like, there's somebody in there. You know what I'm saying? And we'd be right there in the first lane, piecing, painting away. And it was just like, it was just beautiful. Like, after a while, it got to a point where we'd be in there, we'd see the work bums, we'd be like, yo, man, we'd have Bacardi or some Wild Irish Rose or whatever it was, and be like, yo, here. You know, like, we'd look out for them and be like, yo, let us know if it's any cops on the station. So we really, us being from Harlem, and the train yard being, even the employees was really cool with us. It was like, yo, as long as y'all ain't breaking the windows or, you know, damaging those shit, tearing the poster boards, anything that's making us have to do work or fuck with us, y'all good. We don't care about y'all paint the outside. So it was like we was going to our house.
Yeah.
You know?
I read somewhere that you were rolling up with like 40 cans mm-hmm. of paint at a time. Like, first of all, how are you carrying them? And also, where are you getting them?
All right. Everybody that knew me back then knew I was a horrible thief. Like, I couldn't shoplift. I'm black. Mm-hmm. So immediately when you're going in fucking Martin's paint, it's already, and you got this big, bulky jacket on. It's like,
and can I help you? Dude.
Skinny guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, the jacket's three times. Like, can I help you? So it was a young brother named Trap, who, I don't care, Trap could steal water from a well. Like, it is nothing this dude could steal. And Trap would mostly steal the paint, or, I mean, you've seen images of me with the baseball bat in the 3 yard. I would wait for guys to come to the yard, and I would take their paint.
Yeah.
I mean, either I'd make them do a piece with me if they was cool, if not, I would take their paint from them, like, because I couldn't steal. Yeah. I was a horrible shoplifter, you know what I'm saying? Which I'm not angry at.
Right.
I wasn't a good thief.
You know, and Trap was the kid who was in the documentary with you, Star Wars.
Yeah. Trap, as small as he was, he could steal. Like, he'd go in the store and come out with 18 cans, one shot.
Man.
You know, two trips, we got a car. You know, we go to different stores. Trap is still like 100, 115 cans a day.
Holy shit.
Yo, know? I need him in 2020 to steal the election for the Democrats.
That's what I need. Seriously.
So it's so funny because you didn't want your mom to know or your grandparents to know. But then, you know, these documentary filmmakers come around and you are one of the centerpieces to their whole documentary. And it's amazing now to watch. But at the time, did any of your relatives or friends, like, know that you were, you know, a legend at 16 and in this documentary?
After a while, my cousins, you know, they would talk like, yo, did you see what Keith did? But not in a bad way. Like, and my mother, it was a double-edged sword with her. Like, she loved it. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing was how when Scheme had his mother in Star Wars, they wanted my mother, too. My mother wanted to do it because she liked my art, but she worked at 100 Center Street as a clerk.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So
That's not happening.
She couldn't, you know what I'm saying? So she couldn't be in that, like, you understand what I'm saying? But at that point, when she seen how good I was, it wasn't a problem, but it was more of a be safe or why you got to do it on the train.
Right.
Where you could lose your life. You know, like, that's what it wasn't even about the cops. Like, it was more like you getting killed.
Right.
You got the third rail and you got to know how to move down there. Like, a slip of the hip and you over.
Yeah.
You know, and you painting on a piece of wood covering the third rail because for some reason we just always stood on it. It didn't matter. Like, even though you knew that that was just a habit.
You're 2 inches from being like...
Yeah, roast.
Fried.
Yeah. Or you could take the wrong step and your foot could kick it. Like it's just like... But once you down there, you know how to move. And I think that's why it was so hard for cops to catch, you know, graffiti artists because
they didn't want to chase you through the tunnel.
They didn't want to go through that tunnel. Yeah. They didn't want to run through there. Now, they had vandal squads, which they was a little more, you know, they dressed like us and had on sneakers and all that. But even with them, it was like, we was a lot more swifter,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I mean, looking back at it now, you know, mm-hmm. as an adult, what do you think about the policing of graffiti?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I don't see a lot of good street artwork like before. And I'm not going to lie, if somebody wrote on some of my property, a storefront or whatever, or my gate, I want to kick their ass.
Mm-hmm.
So now I guess that I'm older, I see a lot of the fuckery that we was doing. It's funny to me. Still, I don't regret it. But I think the felony part is a little retarded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, come on, man. You going to give somebody a felony for defacing property. I think if you want to do anything, like, make them pay for the damage that they done. Like, you understand if you want to do that, but
Was that Koch?
No. Koch was long gone. Like, this had to be, I say, within the last 10 years.
Mm.
It's a felony now.
Mm-hmm. Did you know guys who weren't necessarily in, like, the graffiti scene, but were more, like, street artists like Keith Haring or... you know, Ramelzy, Basquiat, these type of guys?
Yeah, I met Keith Haring before. I met, I knew Ramelzy personally. Like, he's always, Daz, what's up? Like, he's always cool. We smoked a joint a couple of times here and there. But it used to bug me out sometimes, like, when people would put them in the same category as graffiti artists. Like, I think Keith Haring was more like maybe an expressionist or something like that. He wasn't a graffiti artist, though, but he used to draw, like, with a piece of chalk on, with, like, pigs and, like, like, you see them barking and whatever and shit like that. Like, he'd take chalk on, like, you know how you go on the subways and it'd be, like, where you put the billboards at. Sometimes it would just be all black. He'd tag in that and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't necessarily have called him. He had no pieces on the train, though.
Yeah.
What did you think of the guys who were just, like, doing their tags on the inside of the train? Like, just with, like, a marker.
Those are bombers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
different league. Like,
yeah, exactly. So you had bombers, like you had guys like EC3, you understand what I'm saying? Or you had, like, oh, all right, let me give you a classic example. Band 2, bomber.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, respected inside tag of EC3. You know what I'm saying? Like, LK. You understand, like, they respect, but then, you know, you got toys who would tag on the inside. Like, I can't even think of names.
Mm-hmm.
They're just toys.
Right.
That are just, you know, or be going over people. It's a big difference.
Right.
I drew the Wu-Tang symbol on my on my notebooks.
Right.
So.
I did the Rough Riders R. So, yeah. You know, that was.
But yeah, I just hate when people try to just gel everything together now and say that, nah, man, don't do that. Like, I think Rambo Z was more like a sculptures. So it's like abstract art, whatever this and that. I don't recall him painting no subway cars and everything, but he was always like, you see him at the Mud Club or Dance Terry or the Roxy. Like, he was everywhere, mm-hmm. like where we were at, but he wasn't in the train yard.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hang out downtown?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you just named like three clubs that were downtown.
I used to pop in all those spots, especially the Roxy. Come on. Like,
yeah. Did you really see, like, I don't know, who else was down there? Like Madonna?
Nah, I never seen Madonna. I seen the Blondie.
Debbie Harry?
Yeah, I seen that, the chick that did the Blondie shit.
Mm-hmm.
I seen her there. Everybody was like on
Fab
that
Fab Five Freddy?
I know Fred. Yeah, I know him. Yeah, I see, of course, you know, Fred was everywhere. You understand?
Can't get rid of him.
Yeah, he definitely put it down for the culture. But nah, like, you know.
What were you most proud of, and how did you know if something like became like All City? Did you have people down in Brooklyn who would, you know, somehow get word back to you? And
people from everywhere. I mean, when, you know, different people would say, yo, I got a picture of this, or I seen that. You know, it was funny because graffiti was like a word of mouth thing amongst us. It was our own world. Like, even people that was on the subway platforms, a lot of them couldn't even understand a burner that went by. It could be a scene burner. It could be a mid-77. It could be a case burner. And they couldn't read it, but we'd be sitting there like, oh shit, Case just dropped a new... You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was like our own little underground world, and word of mouth traveled amongst us. It mm-hmm. wasn't... It didn't even matter about anybody else, because you know it was no Instagram,
right,
and Facebook, and all. There was none of that. Some people couldn't even afford a computer, so it was definitely none of that. So... it was really like a word of mouth thing. Like, oh, you, the Grand Concourse on 49th Street, the bench. That's mm-hmm. when people would be talking about, yo, you seen the new such and such piece? Yo, that was crazy. Yo, you seen that character?
Yeah.
Yo, did you hear about this? Like, so that was really like the spot where everything transpired, or just word of mouth.
And how territorial was graffiti?
Oh, man. It was super territorial. Like, some people couldn't go certain places. I went wherever I wanted. I had a lot of beef with a lot of different people.
It's
always with some bullshit I was involved in, but you know, that's just, it was, I was young and stupid.
Did you know who's the dude with the mustache who would
cap or whatever,
yeah, who would tag over?
Yo, let me tell you about this dickhead, man. Yo, the crazy thing about Cap that pissed me off was, me and Cap was cool. We used to smoke dust together. Mm. Me, him, a Mean Three, right on 116th Street. And I guess he got too high one day. Maybe he didn't understand what it said, but he went over me. I said, yo, what the fuck is wrong with this dude?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when he went over me, like, a lot of people kind of didn't want to, you know, tangle with him, because Cap was a wild dude. Man,
when I used to catch us.
Yeah, like, but we was on the same planet, so it didn't matter. Like, I'd go over his Cap throw-ups, too. I'd tag over him. It's even in Subway Art. They got a picture of my tag, like, about 10 tags over the Cap. Like, yeah. I was going over him, too, because I felt like, yo, man, we was cool. Like, what happened? Like, you just went crazy.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, I knew Robert. You know what I'm saying? You fucking dickhead, man. Running around fucking shit up, you know? But, like I said, we was young back then, man. And
yeah.
It was just something to do. Like, I'm past all that now. But,
right.
Yeah, I used to be in all kind of stupid shit, man.
I shouldn't tell you this, but Robert's right back there. He's coming out.
I don't think he can handle me right now. Just say, I'm still in good shape. I don't know what he's looking like now, but word up.
Who else was in your league?
As far as piecing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, definitely I want to shout out Scheme. You know, Scheme was somebody that, you know, we was right there together. That was my partner at one mm-hmm. time before he had went to the Army. Definitely Case was just like, rest in peace. We were somebody we looked up to, Case 2. Part, Chain 3, you know, TMT crew, Mitch 77, Scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's so many guys that back then was doing their thing.
Do you run into anybody anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, I run into a lot of people. I talked to Part of the Time. I talked to Scheme last week. I'm actually going to do some pieces this summer.
Whoa.
I did one of them little metal replica trains for somebody a week ago. I did. I'm back in the mix.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And so, you still got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll show it to you before we leave because I got it in my phone.
But
I still got the touch. Some things you can't lose.
Yeah.
Some things you just can't. Like, I'm the type of person, I get a spray can in my hand or mark in my hand. Give me like around 15 minutes and it's there.
Wow. So not only were you heavy into graffiti, but you were b-boying.
Yeah, breakdancing.
And you did, you had a couple bars in the documentary.
Yeah.
So what did, how did
well,
you...
Well, first of all, we need you to freestyle for the next 100 bars. Yeah. Just real quick. Just drop 100 bars on us.
Well, it's the Desi Dez and the Casey Case and D5. We going to rock the place.
Hey.
And if you base in our face, you get disgraced because we are the crew who got the bass.
Hey.
That was the freestyle I did back then on Star Wars, man. I was 16 years old. But that was the freestyle that we went into the rocket in the pocket.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The message and everything. But yeah, that was that freestyle back then, man.
Crazy.
And you're not even on dust right now.
Nah.
As far as I
I'm sober. Yeah. Nah, I'm all, I get high going on 28 years, man.
Congratulations.
No weed, nothing. Yeah. Nah, I drink my champagne. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, my champagne, I'm going to do that. But all of that was just me being young and not having no guidance. You understand? I grew up without a father. You understand? My mother tried the best she could, but she stuck by me. And when my grandparents, what could they really do to control me?
Sure.
You understand? So I had to learn everything I learned through the street.
Yeah. But you're 16, East Harlem, and also sometimes in the Bronx.
Yeah, back and forth.
Right.
Yeah.
So you are, and Zulu Nation.
Yeah, I was a Zulu.
And you're out in the park, and so you're seeing Flash, and you're seeing Afrika Bambaataa. You are at the center of something, but did you know what that something was?
Yo, that's the crazy thing about it, and I try to tell everybody, and that's what kind of pissed me off with this culture today, is that when we started doing hip-hop, we didn't even know it was hip-hop. We didn't have a name for it. It was no name for it. It was something, what we called it was trying to do something to take the fact off our mind that we was fucked up. And when I say fucked up, like, we wasn't eating out the garbage can. That's not just, what I'm saying is we couldn't do the things that a lot of other people could do because we was young. And the roof over our head, the food we ate, and the clothes we had on our back, and going, that was our blessing. You understand what I'm saying? So with that, we was cool. But, you know, the basketball every day, you know, football, whatever it was, it's just like it was something else was missing. And, you know, the breakdancing came, you know, and then, you know, the graffiti and, you know, the DJing, you know, it was always there. But before it conformed into the hip-hop aspect, you know what I'm saying, the emceeing, which DJs always used the mic before they started putting it into the rapping aspect. These were just all the different things that we did every day just to take our mind off the bullshit. Like, you know, we come outside one day, there's music going to be in Schaumburg Plaza today. Word, floor master's going to be breakdancing. Yo, let's put our shirts on. Like, we all had our shirts with the iron-on letters.
Yeah.
And we put our shirts with our names on and go over there and watch the battles. You know what I'm saying?
You had KG on it?
Oh, yeah. KG was my name. KG or Keith G.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was Keith G was my name, but KG was, after a while, I just went with the KG. And we'd go over there and watch the battles, and then sometimes we went to other people's blocks to break dance, and then it'd be days that we were like, yo, let's go to the train yard. We go do graffiti. Mm-hmm. Then with days we was like, well, let's bring the equipment out in our park. And that's where you see that infamous picture of me in the back of the park with the Kango DJing. And I was a little older then. I was about 17 then when Henry Chalfant took that picture. But it was like every day it was just something different to do. It wasn't like this is hip-hop culture. Like, because we wasn't getting paid for nothing. There was no money involved. I mean, when we did house parties, it was 50 cents at the door. People didn't have 50 cent, we let them in anyway. You understand what I'm saying? Or they sit in the hallway and be smoking. So they say, yo, people come up, we got to call the cops. Like, yo, come on, come in. Like, you blowing up the spot. So it was like, that wasn't the motive. The motive was just having something to do. And, you know, that's how the culture came about. The older dudes, like Flash and Theodore and, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and them, they figured it out to where the money aspect started coming into the game. And, you know, later on, like this era here, I would say about 90s came, that's when people really started learning how to make money without getting raped by the corporate guys. Sure. You understand what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Because even early on with the, you know, the guys that got the record deals like Funky Four Plus One More, and, you know, they didn't get a deal like guys are getting today.
Right.
Nah, I'm pretty sure they probably got like some clothes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? A couple hundred for their pocket and may have never seen a royalty a day in their life.
Right.
Because it was early on and we didn't know that. Just the fact of being, you know, on a stage or you're going to do a video on me or whatever, that was just enough because that's not why we was doing it in the beginning. You understand what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, with that being said, it's just like, man, it was just seeing it where it's at right now. It's a blessing. But once again, we kind of lost control of it. So look where it's at now. It's like trickless magicians. Like it's no, like real. It's no longer about your talent.
Right.
It's about what gimmick you got going on.
And how many rabbits you can pull out of the hat.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like you could go to a guy that's not even into rap who has a big mansion, 5 cars, and you could go shoot a video at his spot or whatever and have him have a couple girls there, whatever. And people really believe that this is your life and idolize you, you could get rich. It's
right.
Smoke and mirrors.
Right.
And you could be horrible. So now it's about the materialism over the talent, and I don't condone that.
Okay, so you had turntables as early as like 13, 14, something like that?
Funny thing is, when I started DJing probably before I was into graffiti, but in that, I was, first time I messed with turntables, I was 11. And it's so funny because, I'm not going to say his name because he got mad last time, but it was an older dude in my project who used to give me loose joints to sell in school. You know, y'all know what joints is?
Yeah.
No, because, you know, times went, there's this blunt now.
Right, yeah.
She give me loose joints to sell in school. So, I didn't know about that. He's giving me, say, selling for $1. And, you know, you take 50 cents, give me 50 cents. I'm like, all right. So, I come with his money. He'd be like, how much money you made? I'd be like, nah, some of the guys only had 50 cents or 75 cents. He was like, no, you can't do that. You give away your profit. Like, you understand? Like, so, he took a liking to me, probably because I was kind of quiet and young or whatever. So every now and then he'd have these house parties. It got to a point where I didn't want to go to school anyway. So, and then, you know, they have girls there and everything. So he told me to come to his crib and he need me to DJ. I'm like, I don't know how to DJ. He's like, no, don't worry about it. You're going to be all right. So say he had me in the back room with the door closed. You know what I'm saying? The speakers was out here. Living room is bigger than this. This was the party.
Yeah.
He had 2 turntables set up. There's no mixer, but you know, the component sets, like the old component sets, he had the stack of 45s. He said, look, he had one hand here. He said, when this one is playing, he said, when this one is going off, when you see it going off, you put this needle down here, right? Turn this one down and turn this one up. So I did it, you know. I kept doing it, boom, right? So one time, you know, I start smoking, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So I'm smoking and I kind of started bugging out. So the music goes off and I hear everybody, hey, yo, what the fuck? So he comes and says, yo, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, he said, oh man, you getting high, damn. Like, no, come on, you got to keep it going. But what happened was that day, I realized that I had power. Like, I controlled those adults in the other room. Them 15, 16-year-olds, when I played the music, they partied.
Yeah.
When it stopped, they stopped. They all was dependent upon me to keep it going. I liked the way that felt.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Did you know any tricks? Like, did you have any, like, you know, moves?
Crab scratch?
Yeah, all that?
No, right there. No, that was my first time. I didn't know nothing.
Yeah, eventually.
Now, as time went on and people got wind that I knew a little bit. It was another guy named Myers, or William Myers, and he had a mixer. You know what I'm saying? I'll never forget, he had that Gemini mixer, that big old crazy Gemini mixer, and he had the Technique 210s. And he used to let me come to his house, and he used to let me practice. And that's when he started teaching me the back and forth. You know, I was kind of rough at first. I couldn't really catch the beat on time, because timing is something that takes time to learn how to catch the beat. But I would go to his house and practice every day, beg my mom to get me some turntables. And I remember the first ones I got was Girard turntables. Couldn't afford techniques, but I learned, like, say they had the felt pads for the turntables. My felt pad was, I took one of my mother's old albums, put the record there, cut around it, put that cardboard there and the 45 record under it, and it would spin just as good as a felt pad. You know,
you're like MacGyver.
You learn to make provisions.
Yeah. Ingenuity.
So eventually, once I got around 13, 14, I was one of the nicest dudes in my neighborhood.
Can we talk about your neighborhood? Like, Alpo was from there, right?
AZ, yeah.
Like all these guys.
No, just Alpo, just Alpo? On the east side. AZ is from the west side.
Yeah. What was the nicest car you saw driving by?
Benz. He had Poe had so many cars, man. Like, it was what car he didn't have. Mm. Like, but he had the Benz with the BBSs on it, BBSs, whatever they call them shits, and he had all kind of cars. But the thing a lot of people don't even realize is that with him, he likes bikes. Like, Alpo would be wheeling from 100th Street to 125th Street. Like, that was his thing beyond cars. A lot of people ain't really, like, if you were from the east side, you wouldn't even know that. Even in the movie Paid in Full, they didn't show his upcoming from the east side. They only showed from the west side activity. You understand what I'm saying? But, yeah, like, I knew him from... I lived in building 429. He lived in 430. Mm-hmm. You know, and back in our time, like I said, like, things was rough. One of our old hustles was to throw a garbage can on FDR Drive. And what that would do was congest the traffic. And then we'd walk alongside the barrier. You know, they ain't wondering what's going on. If we seen that chain or that fat looking bag or whatever, we yapped it and hopped over the wall. Our project was there. Nobody was chasing us in that project. You understand what I'm saying? So those are some of the struggles we had coming up in our neighborhood. But Poe was definitely from my project. I knew him coming up. And a lot of the things that he's done, I don't know him by that. Like, right. I don't know. Like, when I found out about all the killings and this and that and the third, I was like, I don't know that Albert right there. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know him. Mm-hmm. Like, you understand? Yeah. That's not the one I know.
What's even there now? What's on 105th and 1st now?
Project.
Project still?
Yeah, Project. I mean, but you know, they gentrified that whole, like, it's a lot of new buildings that wasn't there when I was there, doormen, all kind of shit. But that project is still there. You know what I'm saying? It's still ugly. They got them big... anywhere you see a project, we got the big police lights, and that look like a police station there, that means the project is hot.
Mm-hmm.
Block is hot. It's a lot of criminal activity going on, and that's what's over there.
Is Bodega Bams around there?
He's a little further up. He's right like around 119th, like right where my studio is up. Same area. No, we on 1st Avenue. He was on 2nd Avenue. But a lot of people come from my neighborhood, like Cameron.
Yeah.
He's from over there, Black Rob, from over there.
How far were you from 1199?
Down a block. I'm from 105th, it's 107th Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's two blocks. Like, they literally right down the block.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Jones was a little further over. It was a hip-hop group called Ziggy. They had the record Toss It Up. They was from Metro North. It was like a lot of people came
Duke
out.
Duke the God, right?
Yeah, Duke the God's from 1199. Yep. Like, it was a lot of people who came from my neighborhood, you know?
You went away for a little bit.
Yeah, short stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Real short stretch. I mean, my stretch was longer for me being a dumbass, because my sentence was only a year. I could have been out in 6 months. I was so fucking retarded that I was in there 8 months, 2 months over, because when I first got arrested, first of all, I was on the run. Because I had a sale charge. They said I sold to undercover. I don't believe I sold to undercover, but that's just some shit they do when they run down and catch you and say, well, you was under investigation, we sold you for you sold to undercover. Alright, whatever. You know, if you got me or picture or whatever, then you got me. If not, you know, fuck you. So, but you know, ain't no money for no lawyer, so they went through one of the bullshit lawyers at me. I went to 2 court dates because I'm waiting for the lab report, because the time they caught me, I only had 3 bottles left. I done sold around 47 bottles. So y'all caught me with 3 bottles and money.
Yeah.
They was like, what's that? Like, you were selling? I said, I wasn't selling. They said, so what's this? I said, I was using it. Like, you understand? I say, fuck that. Right, I was using it.
Right.
So now he got mad. Like, he hit me. Like you lying. You were selling. I saw you. You sold the under. I said, all right. So then lock me up then. That's it. Like, so they took me and locked me up. I'm fighting this shit because I know if they had me, I wouldn't have had a court date going back and forth. 3rd court date, I get a call that my lawyer, now this is already the bullshit court appoint lawyer, can't make it, and they're going to have another lawyer. I said,
what else was he doing?
Exactly. But my thing is, well, who's the other guy? Can I get his number? Never got him on the phone. So I'm like, nah, when I go to court, they going to jam me up. So I was like, fuck it, gingerbread man, catch me if you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I ain't go to court. Eventually, me and my dumb ass, one night, I decide to go home, and they caught me. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The fucking, they came and got me and shit, and I never knew the whole time when I was in North Facility, right? Because I'm a detainee. I got regular clothes on. We in there. That the time they realized it wasn't enough drugs in the lab report for the 3 bottles they caught me with, and they had no proof that I was selling, I was supposed to been out. The only thing they really got me for was like not going back to court in possession. So that shit was a misdemeanor. I was supposed to been out. Me and my dumb ass getting comfortable on Rikers Island because I knew everybody in there. You understand what I'm saying? Was there 2 months over because they asked me, well, do you want to do a drug program or whatever? Because I told them that I was using.
Right.
You understand?
Right. Right. Yeah,
so
right.
I said, yeah, hell yeah. Like, if this is going to get me out, so they held me because they said when the time the lawyer told, my mother kept asking me, when are you getting out?
Yeah.
Like, why are you? I'm like, I don't know. Like, well, look into it. So when I finally started looking into it, they was like, well, your sentence was 6 months. You're supposed to have been out. But being that you said you wanted a program, they were trying to wait for a bed dope. I said, what? Like, your motherfucker's crazy. Yeah. So instead of waiting the 2 weeks, my mother was like, well, why don't you just do the program? So because I couldn't go back to my grandparents' house, because once you get caught selling drugs in the project, they got to take you off the lease or they can get put out.
Right.
So I'd have been coming home to no place to stay. She said, why don't you just go there for about, you know, a couple months, get it together so you can get your spot or whatever. So I said, yeah, all right, cool. Me and my dumb ass signed up for this shit. Now I signed up for another 14 months that I could not leave. If I left, I would have to go back. I'm like, but what are y'all talking about? But that, yo, that's them fucked up lawyers, court appointed dude. He told me, nah, don't worry about it. But that might have been the best thing for me, because I wound up 6 months in there, got a job working there, started a clothes hustle, got my DJ equipment back together. Like, in a year, I fucking was out here looking like I had more money than half my block.
Yeah.
Legal.
Yeah.
All my equipment, getting my shit together.
So somewhere in that time, you got it in your head that I'm going to DJ and I'm going to just destroy it, right?
I had everything to think about now, because now my mind is clear, right? I'm not getting high. I ain't got no idiots. Well, it's idiots, but like, I got my senses back.
Did you get a chance to tell your mom what your plan was?
No. But my mother always, one thing that was so weird, like, when my father had left, I was 8 years old. I was young. And I would, you know, like any kid, you always going to ask, where's your, my father? Why? And she would always be like, don't worry about him. Like, you're going to be make him proud one day. Like, you're going to be somebody. Like, my mother, that's why I love her to death, because if it wasn't for her telling me that, she made me believe it. Like, I would argue with people like, man, I'm going to be a star. Your motherfucker, what? Like, I would, like, because she really made me believe it. And then was the time that I said, yo, you know what? I need to make this happen now. Like, I owe her for everything she's done for me, stuck by me. When I was locked up, she was the one on the visits. When I was in trouble, if anything happened, I don't care. I could do the worst shit. My mother was there for me.
Yo, you're her only child.
Yeah, like, exactly. At the time I was.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But but now this was my opportunity to flip the script. You know, fuck the hustling. You know, sometimes, and this is what holds a lot of people back. You know, sometimes you got to just come to terms with, yo, I was a fucking horrible drug dealer. When you get caught doing something more than once, you're not good at it. You understand what I'm saying? Like, sometimes you got to come to terms with shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm a horrible fucking drug dealer.
Not a good drug dealer and not a good thief.
I fucking liked drugs. So that's fucking worse. You understand what I'm saying? I want to smoke dust. You want to smoke dust with fucking 200 cracks in your pocket. When the dust wears off, the cracks is gone, the money's gone, because you don't know, you probably gave it out to everybody because you fucking burnt.
Right.
You toasted. You,
right.
Like, dust will make you black out. You don't do nothing. Niggas will tell me, yo, man, you know you punched dude. I ain't do. What are you talking about? Yo, man, you fucking got high and you start. So,
yeah.
You know. Now I'm sober, so all of that bullshit, everything, you know, my mind was clear. I was able to get to the money, get to the business. I looked around. SNS was doing his thing. Kid Capri, Star Child, Brucey B, Ron G, Chillwell from the East Side, Doo-Wop. These dudes was putting out mixtapes and doing their thing DJing, and I was like, yo, they getting paid to do this shit now? Nigga's like, yeah, hell yeah. I'm like, serious? I'm like,
you're like, how come I didn't get paid to do like the A to B thing in the back like, for the party?
Like, I'm looking at, yo, like, motherfuckers is really capitalizing off of this culture now. And I got talent. I got two talents. And I said, speedy shit. I could do some galleries and all that, but
right,
I think,
you were selling some pieces, right?
I mean, I did them. I was never in it for that.
Right.
I did some.
But I mean, like, people would come to you and be like, hey, here's a, like, put this on paper or whatever. And you would say, here, give me $600 or something, right?
Yeah, like, shit, even when I was in jail, I would do that shit for niggas for cartons of cigarettes, because dudes would want to send letters to their girl, and they'd be like, yo, man, could you, like, put my name on the envelope, like this or whatever, this and that? And I'd be like, yeah, man, six packs, two packs. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You know, like, cigarettes is money.
You saved some relationships out there, by the way. Like,
I mean, by all means, you understand? So,
but were you also smoking the cigarettes?
Nah.
Okay, just making sure.
Not there.
Currency,
You know what's funny? When I came home, I smoked cigarettes for about 2 years and stopped. It was stupid. Like, I was, it was almost like a substitution. Like, I'm like, why am I spending money? I'm not getting the buzz. I'm not getting high. And this shit's gonna kill me. Right, fuck that.
I mean, you make it sound great.
Yeah, like, you know, like, shit. I'm like, what the fuck? It made no sense, though. Yeah. Like, it really was senseless. So I cut that out. But yeah, people started capitalizing off the culture, and I felt like I needed back in.
At that point, you've gone from Keith G to KG, and then you decide, I'm gonna switch it up and I'm gonna be K Slay.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no other names, right?
Nah, and the only reason why I did that was the time I got back into the game, Naughty by Nature DJ was called KG.
Right. He spelled it out, though. Like,
but that's how my name was spelled out. I spelled it out K-A-Y-G-E-E. Yeah. Exactly. I got party flyers. I got everything in my phone. I got the shit.
Just give us your phone. Yeah. Right now.
Oh, man, my phone is expensive. Not the phone. What's in it? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
A lot of straight Sutton coverage. That's,
yeah. A little bit of anything, you know?
By the way, just let's jump forward a bunch of years. How'd you feel when Kanye had that line in the Can't Tell Me Nothing remix when he was just like, and after all the drama, he slayed him?
Yeah. But this was the funny thing, what a lot of people don't know is when I was on my, like, really up, like, one of the, you know, biggest, most looked up to DJs in the game, and I was working on my album, Joey I.E.
That's our guy.
All right. Yeah. He could confirm this. He reached out to me and said, yo, Kanye West wants to have a sit down with you. I'm like, for what? Like, because, no, I know he's working with Jay-Z and all. Like, fuck, you want to talk? He said, verbatim, he said, well, certain individuals don't believe in his music. And they're telling him he needs to stick to being a producer. I was like, and he wants you to listen to his album, help you pick out some records for a single or whatever, and in return for that, if you let him come freestyle on the show, like, you know, he'll give you some free beats for your album, whatever it is. And I'm like, man, look, I'll just do it just to do it, because I wasn't really, you know. So he came to the studio, humble, quiet. This was a little bit after, you know, he healed up from the Wire situation. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? that record was just starting to play. He had some record with a church choir. I was like, nah. Then no disrespect, I was like, nah. And then he had his joint. He had a bunch of records, but when he played the joint with Twista and Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, man, Overnight Celebrity.
I said, this is the single right here. He was like, yeah. I said, yeah, that's the single right there. Then I gave him a date to come to the radio station. Now, I'm a funny dude. When people came on my show, I throw them in the lion's den. Like, you know, because he's coming to rap. So I called this artist named Graf.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Right? Yeah, Harlem.
Right. Back then, you know what I'm saying? I called, I said, yo, I need you to come up. You know, Kanye West would come. Kanye wasn't Kanye when, so I was just like, yo, I just wanted to see what he'd do.
By the way, not Overnight Celebrity, Slow Jams.
Slow Jams, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, that was the second one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. So he came up. He had Consequence with him. You know what I'm saying? And they went at it for like about a good 45 minutes. Now, some of them rhymes I heard on his album, which is cool because a lot of people do that. But when he was spitting, he was up there. So I said, damn, dude got a little oomph to him. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? So he comes to the studio. Like, now I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to get something from him. So, yeah, real talk. Like, come on, I'm doing a little bit too much. So he came to the studio, and he produced a joint that was on my album called You Don't Want No Drama. It was, anyway, it had Jaheim on it, Nori, yep, yep. Nature,
yeah.
Kanye West came to the studio, produced that joint. Then they was doing this mixtape documentary, some guy that was doing it, and I wound up calling him in the room. Him and David Banner was on my session that, so I put him on that, you understand? And after that, he kind of took off when he put the single out. Now, I remember me and Joey being in the studio with him. I said, yo, you're a real cool dude, man. Don't change. He was like, nah, Slade, never. You know, you know, kind of back then, he talked with his mouth, right? Because his mouth was still healing up.
Right.
And when he took off, he started getting a little crazy. And I never forget, I was in the Mandalay Bay. It was 2007 out in L.A., not Vegas, pardon me. And Shaq and them had a party. That's when I was A&R for Shaq's company.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm leaning on the pole, right? So I see Kanye West come walking in fast, and I believe that's when he was with the Amber chick.
Mm-hmm.
He comes walking in. He looks me dead in my face and walks by.
Ooh.
So I'm sitting there. Right? I ain't saying nothing. He got about 10 steps and ran back. And he said, and I fucked with him because of that. He said, yo, man, I cannot walk by you like that, man. He said, he shook my hand. He said, you good? You need anything from me? I said, no, I'm good. He said, you sure, right? I said, no, I'm sure. He went about his business. Mm. So I'm on Hot 97, and that's when that record came out, the first version. And the hook was so hard, I was killing it and killing it and killing it. And I remember Sav hit me like, yo, that nigga Kanye in the car going crazy. He hearing you going off. He said he got a treat for you, yo. I'm like, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
And when the record came out, they sent it to me. They said, listen to the whole record, play the whole record. And that's when I heard that line on there. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, you know. But yeah, we had a little history, that's, man. So that was
that's so dope.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, that was the story behind it, man. I mean, I haven't heard from him in a while, man. Yo,
but if you ever need anything.
You want to know what? Yeah.
I hope that still stands. You know what I'm saying?
Amber Rose has also not heard from him in a while. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
wait, so you're coming up, you're doing mixtapes, like cassette tapes, right?
Yeah, back then. Yeah.
Where would you like sell them? Like, how were you selling them? How were you getting people on your tapes?
Well, in the beginning, it was just a matter of who you knew. I knew a lot of people. Like, I always knew how to work my way around certain situations to get what I needed. So, a story I tell frequently, I'm gonna tell y'all real brief. I remember when I was trying to put together my first mixtape, going up to Bad Boy, and James Cruz, seeing him. And before I got to see James Cruz, it's like it was these big glass doors, like you had to buzz it. You couldn't just walk in Bad Boy. I seen Mr. C come walking out. He had a bunch of records with him. I didn't know him back then. You know, I just looked at the nigga, whatever. And when Cruz finally come, I'm like, yo, what's up? My name is Kay Slay, and I'm a DJ. Trying to do these mixtapes and trying to see if I got any promos. He said, well, you got any mixtapes so I can hear what you're doing? I said, nah, but, you know, I'm doing some clubs, you know, here and there, whatever. I had some flyers with me. He was like, yeah, but no, I need a little more. I need to hear what you're doing. Like, how we know you're not going to be trying to sell these records? I said, look at me, motherfucker. I look like I'm trying to sell some records. I said, not sell them this way. Then he said, well, come back in 2 weeks because we ain't got none right now. I said, Joe, this motherfucker just walked out here with two on. He said, but that's Mr. C, though. You're not Mr. C. I said, okay. I said, I got you. I said, yo, man, I'm gonna get so hot, y'all going to be begging me not to play records that ain't supposed to be out. I said, watch. So what I did was, I was like, it got to be a way. Like, so I started thinking, who gets shit on the most at the record labels? Ding, interns.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So what I did was found out all the little different interns at these different labels, and I would pay them. I would give them $100. I'd be like, when your CEO or your A&R bouncer, whatever exclusives laying around, take the CD, record the record, put the CD back, and give it to me. Mm. I had about a good 5 of them. And that's how I was getting all them exclusives that wasn't supposed to be out, and new shit, and half done songs, and references to records by artists that wasn't spitting through all kind of shit.
Do you remember like what exclusives you started having?
Well, I remember. Well, what I could tell you for one, shout out to the homie Shine,
mm-hmm.
And I had came across his album, but me and Shine was cool, so I wasn't gonna violate his album. Before it came out, like long before the shit. And I played one record, so I played the exclusive. Mind you, this is Bad Boy.
Yeah. So you're getting a James Cruise right now.
Boom. So I get the call from Conrad. I believe that his name was Conrad. Yo, I'm saying, you played the Sean record, like, you know, how you get the record, da da da. I'm like, I don't know, it just found its way to me. Like, what you mean it found its way to you, man? You had to get it from somewhere. We need to know who you got it from. I said, hold on for a second. Right? I go to my player, put the phone to the speaker, and I click the song. I go, was it this one? He goes, nah. I go, hold on, click. Was it this one? He goes, hold on, click. Is this one? He goes, oh my God, you got the whole album? I was like, yo, tell James Cruz. I said, what's up, man? And hung up on him. You understand? So it's like, at that time, it was nothing that I could not get. It was just like, how the fuck he, you know. And, I mean, pretty much Clue was the same way. But mm-hmm. I know Clue got him probably another way, but he was getting the exclusives too. So it was like, I had to keep up with the Joneses. We got Clue out here. You got Who Kid out here. You understand? I'm saying DJ Envy. It was, you know, Dog Time. It was a lot of brothers doing their thing. So I had to find a way, and that was definitely my way right there.
Yeah. What was your angle? Like, what did you do that other guys couldn't do?
Well, I first started out doing blend tapes with DJ Demo. Right. We had a series called Warning. Then I just started doing exclusives. I would blend in the beginning and then play exclusives after. Then once Clue, and I ain't ashamed to say, he started that trend with just exclusive playing joints back to back, like no mixing, no just exclusives. I'm like, and people was on that shit. Like, I'm like, well, if this is what the fuck the game is conforming to, then I got to do what the game want. So I start, you know, getting exclusives back to back, connect them, talk my shit. You understand what I'm saying? But even then, I was like, okay, I'm emulating what everybody's doing. So what I did was, I'm going to get artists to host my mixtapes. And I remember the first one I did was with Sticky Fingers. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And I was the first one doing that artist hosting shit. I don't care what nobody said. I was the first one to start doing that. And then I remember Feds Magazine was coming out with the issue with Alpo on it. So I'm saying, damn, they're going to be reading the interview about him. But if I was to get him to do an interview from jail talking about what's in the Feds Magazine and put the audio in between the music, people were going to want to hear it, you know, despite the fact of whatever they had to say about him. He did this and that and the third. All right, true. It's not right. But y'all buying Feds magazine to read about it. Y'all going to get K-Slay mixtape to hear about it.
Yeah.
So I reached out to his mom's, you know, which I knew her well. And she spoke to him and he said, yeah, you know, I do that for KG. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what he knew me from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he called and we did that. Then I also had got AZ on the mixtape. Mm-hmm. And I had, rest in peace, I had Larry Davis. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I start getting street figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To host my mixtape. So that kind of separated me from, you know, I had Gangsta Lord there. Like, mm-hmm. I had different guys from the street on my mixtapes. You know what I'm saying? And that kind of took me in a whole nother, okay, he's not just a DJ. He's connected with different people.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? It took me to a whole nother level.
But also, like, you were doing, like, street mixtapes.
Yeah.
You weren't doing, like, you know, doo-wop stuff anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When did the Justo Awards, like, really enter your life?
I believe that was 1999. He reached out to me, and he was like, yo, I need you to come to the date. And he came up to me. It was him and somebody else. He was hype. We need you to come to the award show, this and that. And I'm like, I don't really want to go, whatever, this and that. Like, nah, like, come, man. Like, you're doing your thing, whatever. And I came, and I had one best hip-hop DJ of the year. And I just...
Did you know that you were killing it at that point?
You know...
Or was it, like, sort of in a vacuum because there isn't, like, an internet to sort of get...
Exactly. Like, you really don't know. Like, I just knew I was doing what I was doing. When I won and the reaction to the crowd, and everybody was screaming and all the DJs were there. That, like, it was just like, what the fuck? And even then, it was like, okay, you won. And then next year, I won DJ of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I won two awards. But then, you know, when I really knew... This is what, remember, like you said, there's no internet. Mixtapes are shaking. When I really knew that I was there is the first time I went to South Beach. And that was in 2001. And that's right around the time when I had, did the situation with Chris Lighty.
Mm-hmm. Violator.
Yeah. And I had released the record, 50 Shot Ya. And I went to South Beach. I think it was my Memorial Day weekend or something, and me and my homie came out the hotel to walk the strip. And I could now, keep in mind, I ain't never been to Miami before. But I've been in a lot of different magazines and people see, you know, yo, but I was in a couple of videos, you know what I'm saying? I could not get up the block. Within 40 minutes. And, you know, those are some long blocks.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, from people wanting to take pictures, dude wanting to drop. It just was ugly. Like, it's like I was getting mobbed.
Yeah.
Like I was like Jay-Z or something. It was crazy. And my man Hood is looking at me like, like, we like, what the fuck is going on? Like, all day to where it got where I was like, come on, let's go back to the hotel. Like, I got all kind of people sweat on me and all that. Cause, you know, I'm taking pictures. I just felt ugly. Then came out that night all over again. And the funny thing is, I'm doing a documentary as well called The Gatekeeper.
Currently?
Huh? Yeah, I'm working on that. I'm trying to get it out like right around the time my book come out.
Awesome.
End of the year. And I got video for it because we always used to have a video camera. So I got video footage of all of this. Like,
crazy.
I have even when I used to pull up to the station, the Hot 97,
mm-hmm.
do my show, there would be literally 70, 80 guys. The most guys was I say about 113, we counted, out in front of the building, waiting to give me CDs, blasting their music. It's like a party every Thursday night. Like,
yeah.
It was crazy. Like, the frenzy I had on me when I first started working at that station was unbelievable.
All right, this is a little bit forward, but you sort of sunned us when we came up to you one time.
I did.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so come on, let's go.
We're talking
2007.
2007, right?
Yeah.
So we start out and we're just like, all right, we're gonna do like some authentic like interviews and sketches and whatever. And part of that. Someone called us down to Atlantic when they were at 1290 on 6th Avenue, right? So we run into you in the lobby, and we're like, oh shit, we got our Canon XL, like big camera, right? And we're like, yo, that's Case Slay right there.
We were going to see Jim Jones.
Oh yeah, we're going to see Jimmy because he was working at Warner at the time, right? So we're downstairs and we see you there, and we're just like, yo, like this is the time of like getting drops, right? We're like, yo, that's Case Slay right there, and you know, we're just two kids like new to this, like we're like, yo, let's get a drop. So we go up to you and we're like, yo,
this is who we are, yeah, like, big fans.
Like this is a big moment for us. Can we just get a drop? We'll take the camera out and you just say like, hey, what's up? It's Case Slay, and like you're watching It's the Real or something like that. And you're like, nah. I mean, the hot dog. I don't want like food all over me. Like, no, nah, I'm not good. And we're like, oh yeah. No, yeah, you're
totally
eating.
That totally get it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yes.
A week later,
maybe
right?
less. You're on. You put out a YouTube video where you're sitting on the toilet and eating a bowl of cereal.
Oh yeah,
because
yeah.
like Pap and Uncle Murder were going.
Yeah,
at
yeah, they was
right?
going at it.
And we're just like, this guy can sit in a toilet, but he can't like have like you know food on his shirt. Like. that video is not online anymore, but it happened. Yeah. It happened, right?
The
toilet bowl one. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. yeah
we're just like, man, Case Slay got us. Like, just like,
yeah.
Damn, man, I didn't know that happened.
But
man.
You know what? Though 10 years later, here
yeah.
you are.
Yeah, exactly.
On the podcast,
exactly.
Can we get that drop?
Yeah.
Man, y'all got the drop, the show, whatever. Y'all can get it all.
So you're. Killing it with mixtapes. You're at Hot 97 Thursday nights. You know, we grow up listening to you. We know what a powerful like medium this is. Like when you shout out all the guys in jail, when you like drop that like the Drama King is in the building, like drop, like we're with you, but like we have no idea what it's like to have 113 people outside handing you mixtapes. Was there anybody there who handed you a mixtape that actually became something?
Damn. It was a lot of people that used to be in front of the building. I'm saying Papoose, who I wound up dealing
yeah,
with.
Right.
Uncle Murder used to be out there. Gravy used to be out there, the one who he played Biggie.
Sure,
Biggie
yeah,
Notorious.
Yeah, yeah.
Was
Maino outside?
Maino, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maino, every artist.
Every New York, yeah, mixtape artist.
New York artist. But actually, when I first met Maino, it was at my video shoot with... for Too Much for Me with A. Marie, Foxy Brown, Leah.
Yeah.
Like, that's when he first came
out. Not Nas.
Not Nas. Yeah.
Yeah, not yeah. Nas. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, y'all already know that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, pretty much every artist that was coming up.
Yeah.
Used to be in front of that building. We had Shells used to be out there. Poster Boy.
Yeah.
Was doing his thing back then. Cassidy. Like, it was like everybody.
Cassidy was way downside.
Yeah.
Wow.
Everybody.
This is the most 2005 conversation I've ever had.
Yeah. Like, everybody who was pretty much doing their thing, it was just not even like, it was certain dudes that I had affiliation with people, like, and they could have had them, but it was like, I know everybody's going to be out there, so I need to be out there. Like,
yeah.
Like, everybody would come out there, even if it was just to hang out. Like, it's going to be live. Then they all have cars blasting the show from downstairs and just sitting, hoping, like, waiting to see if their record was going to come on.
You know? What did Jay-Z think when you played Ether?
I mean, it's hard to say what he think, but I can't imagine he liked it.
But I mean, like, coming from you, I didn't know, like, if he had any interactions from you. Because obviously he didn't like the song.
I mean,
starts with fuck Jay-Z.
I mean, well, me and her had a couple of like small like altercations, nothing big, you know, but we had words on different occasions and shit because, you know, like hip hop is an emotional sport when it comes to your brand being gunned at. You understand what I'm saying? But I was always more like, shit, I'd be mad at Nas more than anything. He made the fucking record. Like,
yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? But I think the angriest Jay I ever seen him mad at me was when I played Ether, right? But this was after Ether was out. Then Fat Joe had a record called King of New York, and I was playing that. But it wasn't going at Jay, but it was called King of New York.
Sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I'm Saturday night, I'm going in screaming, King of New York, Nas, the new King of New York, whatever. Playing the Fat Joe record, you know, and everything. I'm just doing K Slay. And then I remember Danny S hitting me, and it was New Year's Eve.
And you were saying Happy New Year's?
Nah. Like, he hit me and said, yo, what's up? Yo, Jay want to holler at you. I'm like, all right, no doubt, you know. What do you want to holler at me about? He's like, I don't know. He want to holler at you. All right, cool. Have him call me. So he called me. I'm like, yo, what's up? I'm like, what's up, man? He said, I'm saying, what's up with this King of New York shit? I hear you say King of New York. I said, well, which one you upset about? Like, I said it twice. Like, you know, I said it about Nas because he beat you with Ethan. I said about, you know, Fat Joe had a record, King of New York. And he just fucking exploded. Like, yo, y'all think I'm tripping over that shit? I ain't tripping over this shit. It was a fucking setup. He set me up. This shit was rigged. Like, and I got quiet because I looked at my phone. Like, I never heard the homie get out of character like that. I said, man, I ain't got nothing to do with the station politics. That motherfucker, I know you ain't got nothing to do with it. You don't push no buttons up there. You don't push, and I know who control shit. So at this point, I'm like, yo, look, man. It's New Year's Eve, man. I'm still in the hood. You ain't got nothing else better to do than call a nigga from the hood talking about this shit right here. And I think at this point he caught that he was a little bit out of character in who he was talking to. It was like, yo, you know what? You're 100% right, man. He said, yo, congratulations on all your success and your endeavors. We good? So I paused for a second. He said, we good? I said, yeah, we good. He hung up, I hung up. But see, that was pertaining to when he dropped Super Ugly. Mm-hmm. And they called that big meeting at the station and played it. And I was real vocal about, now, everybody has to understand, this wasn't Ether against Takeover.
Right.
Now, I still would have felt Ether was better than Takeover because Ether was solely about him. Takeover was divided against him and Mobb Deep. It was mm-hmm. more than really Mobb Deep and them in the beginning. And then he added the Nas verse later because I had the first version that was on my mixtape from Summer Jam. It ain't that ask Nas, he don't want it with whole. It like that. Nobody heard the whole verse towards Nas. So he put that out.
Except for your friend Kanye.
Yeah, exactly. So he had put Takeover out. Ether came. Then after Ether came, he came with Super Ugly.
Right.
Now, when he came with Super Ugly was nowhere in the lane of Ether.
Right. Right.
I'm sorry. And it came out later on that, you know, I wasn't picking sides or just being bitter about anything. It's the truth. Like, at first, it was just me up in the room looking crazy. You know what I'm saying? To after that, everybody agreed with me because people on the phone lines was going nuts, like, y'all crazy, like, right. So now that's after that. Now I'm on the air, King of New York, this and that. So I guess he kind of felt like, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. Hold on, this motherfucker is too right. vocal with a lot yeah. of this shit going on. But that's probably, I mean, most of the other little run-ins we had, that was probably the time I seen him the most out of character. But FYI, as in the past, he doing what he doing, I'm doing what I'm doing. I ain't old and bitter. And that's why I hate to tell any type of stories about any kind of, you know, run-ins you have with people, because they try to say, oh, he's just old and bitter and Jay is doing this and that. No, if y'all ask me a question right. on your podcast, yeah, yeah. So I answered it. It's like I came up here to talk about, but you know how blogs do. Blogs like to take little parts and throw it out there to the people that's listening. Try to say, oh, that nigga just old and bitter. He talking with, nah, that's not it, yo. Right. Ask a question, I give an answer.
Yeah. Also, your skin looks great. You're not, you know, old.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I drink a lot of water, man. Yeah. I advise everybody to drink a gallon of water every day.
28 years sober, too, by the way.
And you're going to piss a lot. But you have to drink a gallon of water every fucking day. If you got a weak bladder, don't do it.
See, that's why you came on the podcast, to give that PSA.
Little PSA.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Can you talk about first meeting Cam and Jimmy?
That's funny. Cameron is going to be younger. Yeah, it's funny. It goes right back to, I had got Cameron's album before it was supposed to be out.
Confessions of Fire.
Ooh, early.
Do you remember the mixtape or something?
Like what, that you're on?
No, the one I put out.
Oh, no. No. I'm not Nardwar.
Long story short, I was wrong. I played probably a little more songs than I should have played okay. on the mixtape. Cam never met me, didn't know me, and he was sending messages about when he see me, he want to do this, that, and third. I'm like,
how's he sending these messages to you?
Through different people.
I mean, Harlem's not that big, so.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm an older dude. I'm older than Cam. Cam ain't really know me, whatever. So I had this tournament called We Will Ball in my project, and there was a guy named Richie Parker, and they used to play with Rock and them from Jefferson. And, you know, Cameron knew how to hoop. So right in between that, it's so funny because who comes walking on the court in my project? my project with Richie Parker and them. It's Cameron. So I tap my brother. I go like this. So he go to like, yo, I'm like, no. We're not going to do that. So I go over to him. And I tap him, go, yo, what up, Cam? He go, what up? He gives me a pound, and when he goes to move, I hold his hand. I go, yo, it's Kay Slade. So, you know, he kind of looks and goes, yo, that was all a misunderstanding. I said, I'm not worried about that, man. I said, you good, though? He go, yeah. I'm like, all right, cool, man. You're going to have a good time out here today.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, and they played, and everything. And after that, like, it was funny. That's how we met.
Crazy.
And you know, we wasn't the best of friends from there or whatever, but what happened was as time went on and I heated up, I remember him reaching out to me and saying, yo, I'm putting together this movement, Harlem Diplomats, you're doing your thing, I want you to be a part of it. And I'm like, okay. And he was like, yo, I'm going to come by your crib, you know, do some freestyles, whatever, this and that there. So he would come by the spot I had on 119th at first, freestyles, him, Joel Santana. But Joel's, I had already knew him since he was younger with draft pick. Mm-hmm. So he'd been to my crib way before that. Then he had Jim Jones, and Jim Jones was just starting to rap. And I got the first freestyles he did over the Motherless Child joint, the Wu-Tang joint, mm-hmm. the Motherless Child, got that freestyle. McGruff, like they would all come through. We start formulating it. And then when it came time for him to do the mixtape, here we go again. We go to that was the Diplomat, the one we had all the mix on.
Yeah.
Baseline Studio. Which we know who ran Baseline Studio.
Sure.
And we went there and we did the mixtape. Bumped it to Jan. I almost had an altercation again. Man. You understand? But that, you know.
But he must have also like not been happy that you were working with the Diplomats.
No, but this what thing is, it wasn't a matter of me working with them, because I'm from Harlem and I was rocking with Cam, and him and Cam wasn't the best of friends already. So that had nothing to do with me. That was a him and Cameron thing.
Yeah.
And me and his thing were separate. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Man, Brooklyn versus Harlem.
Yeah, it was pretty much. And it's been like that in the past, but it was, so, you know, once we put that tape out, the shit starts shaking. It started making noise. And I remember telling Cam, I said, yo, y'all got to go back in and complete the old boy song, because it was only a minute and change freestyle. I said, y'all got to complete that. That's a hit. That's a banger. He said, yeah, you're right. They went in and did it. That song went out the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Then if y'all remember, Come Home With Me, I'm on the intro of the album.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? I'm on the intro of that album, Talking Crazy. I was originally on the hook to Hey Ma. But I made him take me off it.
What were you saying on there?
That you know, that shit, Hey Ma.
Yeah.
My voice couldn't do it. I said, yo, I sound like a fucking bitch. Cam, take me off. I can't. He was like, no, Slade, just try to relax it. Say like how you talking to a bitch. And I'm like, Hey Ma, what's up? I'm like, yo, my nigga, I can't, like, certain things, certain people's voices is not working on. But if you look at the back of the credit of my album, my name is still on there, but yeah, because I originally tried, I couldn't do it, man.
How well did you know Mace or any of, like, his version of Harlem World?
Oh, you mean the rapper Mace?
Yeah.
Yo, I could tell you the craziest shit nobody ever understood is I never met Mace till, like, around 3 years ago.
3 years from what?
Like, literally, for some reason, we was just never in the same place at the same time. It's weird.
Yeah.
Super weird. I mean, I know I got a little age on him and everything, but I never seen him before.
Crazy.
Nobody believes that. Like, I mean, I've seen Big L, McGruff, Cameron, like, you name it. Like, me and Mace just never. Everybody in this group, Rest in Peace, HUD 6, Loon, Pierre Cardin, like Blinky, everybody. Yeah, yeah.
You just named all of Harlem World except for him.
Yeah, because I'm from uptown. I just, for some reason, I never ran into Mace till about 3 years ago, and that was even in passing too.
Yeah. Well, what'd you say? Were you just
we was walking by, like, you know, and he caught out with me, He was like, yo. I was like, yo. Like, you know what I'm saying? But we was both on the move, but we both acknowledged each other.
Yeah,
you
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that.
You were also in the intro to 50 Cent, right? You did his intro for, Power the...
I did the... Yeah, that was for the sampler. Before it came out, the sampler, I called... He called me in there to do that again. I was there... But like the beginning of a lot of people's careers, a lot of people don't know that. I don't really speak about it a lot because, you know, if they don't speak about it, I won't. But it's funny, even the story with the, how that happened. Rich Nice from Trackmasters hit me up, and that's when they was at Sony.
Right, yep.
And they said, yo, 50 wants you to come do his mixtape for him. You know, I got a check for you, whatever. I'm like, all right, cool. I come by, it was a Hit Factory. I go in the booth, they throwing the music on, then 50 comes running in the booth laughing. He gives me a pound. What up, K-Slay? He goes, yo, I'm letting you know right now, I don't have a dime to give you, but if you do this shit, I'll never forget it. You won't regret this. So I look at this dude, and I'm like, yo, the fucking nerve of him. Like, but the way he did it and the way he finessed it, I said, yo, cut the mic on, man.
Wow.
And I did it. You know what I'm saying? I did it.
So a lesson to everyone out there, tell K-Slay you have money for him, and then
run
the, yeah.
That shit won't work no more. But you know what it was? He was talented. So I felt like it didn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I felt it was going to go somewhere. I didn't know he was going to go where he went, but... And then eventually he came to my crib to freestyle, and then that same studio, he had that little mishap at. It was a Hip Factory. It was like a little bit right after that. And then he wound up catching his other situation where he got shot. And I never forget, I had just got signed with Violator.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting up in the office, you know, with Eric Nix. And he came walking in the office slow. You know, he's kind of, you know, like recovering. He was real thin. And I'm looking at him because he was a real bulky dude.
Right.
Like, looking at him, I was like, kind of like, damn, man, like. I felt bad, like they did him dirty, and he was like, yo, Slay, man, you see what niggas did, like, you know, yo, I'm gonna need you. I'm like, nah, don't worry, we good. Like, we good.
Yeah.
And Chris Lighty came to me and was like, yo, your budget open, I'm gonna swing something that way, and I'm gonna let him go in the studio. I said, all right, cool, like, go ahead. And then he came back. They recorded Magic Stick, and I was like, nah, I don't want that, because not that it was whack, but before Little Kim, prior, that was just a dude with a record rapping about his dick.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, think about it.
Yeah.
The Little Kim collabo would have made it a back and forth. Like,
yeah,
I could, but I was like, let me hear something else. And then he went in and he recorded 50 Shots. I said, that's a K-Slay record right there.
Yeah.
That's mine. Like, you understand what I'm saying?
Yo, it's so funny. Like, looking through our iTunes from, like, mine and Jeff's, like, we got... so many of your songs, right?
Yeah.
And like, so you're on so many tracks that we got in our iTunes. One of our favorites that's an original of yours is Not Your Average Joe.
Oh, man.
That's a great fucking record.
Yo, I'm so angry with the label with that one. That's when I knew it was time to leave, because that record should have fucking went through the moon.
Yeah, like, no kidding.
Fat Joe... Joe Button, the R&B singer Joe.
Yeah.
And Not Your Average Joe. Everything was just like a no-brainer.
And the sample, I mean.
Yo, and the shit that's so crazy is that the first single I used off of that, which was political, it was with 3-6 Mafia, Who Gives a Fuck Where You From, but that's because NFL Street had collaborated with Sony, and they wanted me as a character in the game. So I was a character in the game. Once you got to a certain level, you would play my team. And we also had a digital image video of us doing the video with the cartoon characters and the regular ones. So, okay, I said I understood that. And I rock with 3-6 Mafia. So we needed an up-tempo joint to come first. I said, well, we're going to go up my dudes, 3-6. But the second single was supposed to be that. This is where the scumbag shit come in. Def Jam was interested in the record because Joe Buttons was on it, and they couldn't find a single for him. So they was like, yo, well, would you mind? What it was, I had so many Def Jam records on my album. They was like, well, we'll clear everything for free, which they was going to clear anyway.
Yeah.
But we'd charge them a fee. But we also want to use this record for Joe Budden's album.
Did you have Scarface on that album, too?
Yeah.
Scarface. Another Def Jam. Yeah.
Yeah. Scarface with Ghostface. The record was Scarface. Yeah. Both of them was from Def Jam. Yeah, it was called The Face Off. Yeah. No, my shit was Def Jammed up. Interscoped up. Like,
you'd have
everybody
signed to the wrong label.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and, I said, man, you know what? I am going to hate. Go ahead. But, you know, but they didn't even do it. Like, that record just dwindled, man. You know
still a great record.
Yeah, it is. I play it every now and then on Shade 4-5, yeah, man.
There was some other, I was just looking up on my phone. I was trying to figure out, there was a mixtape you put out, and it was a guy's face who was mashed in. And I can't remember, it had a great title to it, too. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
You know what's so crazy? I just looked at that cover the other day. It looked like he got shot, hit with a shotgun or something.
Yeah, like his face. And I was just like, wow, that looks like hamburger meat. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's crazy.
I can't. I did so many tapes, I can't. But I just looked at that. It's crazy you said it, because I just looked at that shit the other day and said, what the fuck made
me that
cover?
Yeah. I read somewhere that you actually put together every bit of Straight Sun magazine.
Yeah, I do.
That's crazy.
Yeah, every page, every article, everything. Yeah, I do that page by page.
Like, that's amazing. So it's a lot of asses.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm never bored doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
There's famous audio of you, of Clue calling in, mm-hmm, and you going in on him to the nth degree.
Which we find hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it's a place and a time, right?
Yeah.
Like, what did you feel during that, like, era? Like, between, like, you know, you and someone who was, you know, of a similar level?
What it was is that, and I could sit here today as a grown man and say, it was nothing really personal with Clue. It was, he was in the way. Like, if it's just like, boom, y'all two steps away from being the greatest podcast of ever, but they keep throwing these two podcasts ahead of y'all. Mm-hmm. You're like, you know what, fuck this shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that's almost what it was like for me. So I said, in order for me to get the crown, I gotta bang with the dude with the crown. Mm-hmm. Hell, that even if I don't get it, I'm going to be aligned with him, because I'm going to go head up with him and I'm going to give him a run. So, you know, I was doing an interview upstate somewhere and somebody asked me something pertaining to him. I said what I said, and somebody up there knew him, called him and said, yo, I heard you were saying. I said, yeah, I did say this. I repeated exactly what I said. Yeah, like, and that conversation went from there. Now, mind you, that was not over the air.
Oh.
You know, it wasn't. Just so y'all know, that recording was not over the air. They recorded off the air because, of course, we was cursing and all kind of shit.
Yeah,
so they couldn't play that on the air.
Right.
So
well, I didn't know if there was, like, rules you were breaking after, like, midnight or something.
Nah, and it wasn't at Hot 97 either. We was upstate at another nigga's show. I forgot whose show it was. I can't remember whose show it was, but it wasn't even in, we wasn't even down this part of New York. It was like upstate, or Connecticut or Boston. Like, I got to backtrack now because I got to try to remember where it was at. But anyway, long story short, what happened was after that, like, they had that audio. I didn't have it, Clue didn't have it. So it was like, all right, we had an argument. Nobody knows about it. It was what it was.
Right.
But then,
surprise.
No, what happened was a dude I knew said, yo, nigga said they got this audio with Clue with blacking out on you and they going to edit it and this and that. So I was like, whoa. Because, you know, people can edit shit to make it sound a certain way. So that's when I reached out to the dude that had it. Listen, better get that shit to me the way it was or I'm going to bust that head. Like, you know, I was on my old school shit and he gave it to me. And then, you know, I said, fuck that. Before anybody try to throw it out and alter it any other way, they're going to hear it the exact way it was. Mm-hmm. And it is what it is. And I put the shit on a mixtape, I think. I think it was The Month of a Bad Guy, some shit. Yeah. I think it was that tape. I just put it out. But like I said, that was just a competition, man, like a competitiveness in me, competitiveness in him. he doing his thing, I'm doing my thing. You know, we see each other, we say what's up, we cool. You know what I'm saying? We ain't best friends.
Right. Yeah.
We don't go bowling together, but when I see him, it's love. You understand what I'm saying? Who do you go bowling with? Nobody. I don't even know how to bowl. You know what I'm saying? Word up.
Who has a better leather collection than you?
Nobody.
Ooh.
Nobody.
Talk about it.
Nobody. Listen, man, when I tell you, I have so many leathers that I have some in my storage. Like, I literally can't. I'm talking about jackets with my name on it, all kind of shit, snake skin, suede, all kind. Like, my jacket collection is incredible.
It could.
I forget about jackets that I got. Like, some people even go, yeah, whatever happened to that jacket? Or wait, I go, oh, shit. You know what? Where the fuck that jacket at? Like, come on. Nobody.
Is that all thanks to Harlem?
I mean, I'm going to give you, all right. I would say it's thanks to, like, part of Harlem and part of Eric B. and Rakim. Mm. Their level, they was going to see Dapper Dan, which was Harlem, but their creativeness and their jacket, like, you never seen them wear a jacket that was the same. It always had a different twist and style in it. So I was like, okay, I'm a, you know, twist. No, I'm from uptown. I'm already doing it, but they just made me get extra. Like, you understand what I'm saying? So, yeah, I could say it's a combination of both.
How much does a good leather cost for you?
Well, it depends on how or what you want to get done to it. You know what I'm saying? It could be $2,000. It could be $1,500. It could be $1,000. It depends. Like
$50.
$50. You could get the collar. You know what I'm saying? You probably could get the collar and hold on to it. So you could get, you know, the rest of the jacket, the arm.
Yeah, I'm going
to
do it on layaway.
That's right.
You know? Yeah.
Piece by piece.
Yeah.
That $1.5 million Papoose deal was legendary, like, because that's hitting right when the internet is, like, you know, all the blogs are talking, and, like, he's, you know, he's of an era that, you know, it was like he made it, right? And you got him that deal, and that number was extraordinary.
Yeah.
How'd it feel at the time?
That was a crazy feeling, because I was up against a lot of doubters, disbelievers, you understand, because of the nature of his talent. Like, it was at a time where, you know, trapping was heavy, South was dominant, and they was really not listening to no New York artists, especially if you was going to flip the script a bit, like, you know, like spitting that shit. So I just built him, man, to a level where I knew somebody eventually was going to want to deal with him. And when Chris Lighty seen what I was doing with him, rest in peace, he wanted to be a part of it. Busta Rhymes wanted to be a part of it. Like, a lot of people wanted to be a part of it. Nas was trying to get the situation signed through him, which that was not happening, you know, all due respect.
Because of your relationship with him? Or
it wasn't just a relationship with him. Remember, Nas' deal was running through Jay-Z. So now I'm running the deal through somebody. I had a situation with Nas, and he had a bad situation with Jay-Z, and me and Jay-Z wasn't seeing eye to eye. I was like, that's
bad,
like,
business.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but how far along does that even get for it to be, like, you know, considered that you're, like, that you're bringing up now, like, that it could have happened? You know, like, how far in that process did it get along?
Didn't get anywhere. Once it was mentioned to me, I was like, it's never going to happen, Pat. And then, not to mention, his lawyer at the time was saying that Def Jam offer was $500,000, but we already was getting offered $750,000 once the Touch It hit from Atlantic. But Chris Lighty was like, nah, hold on. Forget about what anybody else talking about. Like, I'm going to get you that bag. Like, we're going to get the bag for him because he's heating up. He said, I fucked up in the past. Let me fix this situation. Like, like, we owe each other this one. I said, okay, Chris. I sat back, and when he hit me and said, yo, you got your lawyer ready, everything? He said, $1.5 million. I was like, fuck out of here. Like, come on, Chris. Like, he was like, I'm serious. Like, he said, yo, my lawyer's called up and everything. It was what it was.
Man, that was the end of that negotiation.
Yeah, it was the end. It was so crazy as Pap lawyer, man. Nigga was a dickhead, yo. I ain't gonna shout him out and disrespect the man, but this nigga, when that happened, like, he tried to tell him, yo, I'm telling you, we should still do Def Jam, this and that. And when he told me that, I was like, yo, come meet me and let's sign this shit and get this shit on, man. Fuck your lawyer. That nigga's an idiot. You know, like, what was your obligation over there? Like, that you was, like, you would want to go somewhere for $1 million less up under two other entities. Nigga, what were you working for, man? Get the fuck out
Wild.
Of here. Yeah, so we did the situation and, I mean, it was a learning experience for him because I tried to tell him to stay away from certain situations when you get in the music industry. Like, these people are doing business. Nobody wants a liability. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Don't fall into these beefs. Don't get caught up in that. Street guys around him help amp him up to feed into little situations and shit happened to where the business didn't want to, the label didn't want to do business with him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but. Did you have a good meal after you signed that contract?
Oh, yeah. My check was $340,000. You know what I'm saying?
That's so, get a couple of others, nice yeah.
Yeah, $340,000. Which, a lot of collars, which yeah. Most of that was expenses because it took 4 years for me to get them that. So that was 4 years of me paying for studio time and paying for things and shit to get done. Like, you understand what I'm saying? But it was worth it, man. Like, you know, I don't regret it.
So now you got a book and a documentary coming out.
Yeah, I got a book, a documentary. I got an album coming out in June. This album is so left field. People ain't gonna be expecting to hear it. It's called The Big Brother. The first single is with Rick Ross, 2 Chainz, and Kevin Gates.
Well, Jesus.
Right. I got a joint, Lights Glowing, and that's with... Sheik Luch, Styles P, and Scarface. All right. I got a joint.
That's a song for the ladies.
No, boy, yeah. Rough ladies. You know what I'm saying? I got a joint called Regulate, which that's Jadakiss, Lloyd Banks, and Joell Ortiz. This is one of my favorite. Jealousy is Busta Rhymes, Tech N9ne, and The Game.
So you're not playing?
Nah,
How long did it take to put this together?
I Dr. Dre'd it.
Yeah.
I Dr. Dre'd it. It was like a time where I didn't feel like it was going to be appreciated and I wasn't throwing it away. One of my favorite records I got, it got Kendrick Lamar, Mac Miller, and Kevin Gates.
Wow. What?
Yeah, I got a joint with them on it. I got another joint called My Culture that got Ransom, Papoose, John Connor, and Locksmith on it.
Wow.
That's lyrical. That's some lyrical.
Who are you putting this through?
Ghazi.
Empire. Oh, Empire. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I already did the situation with them. So that's locked.
Congratulations.
In.
Yeah. They are joined. The place right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I got shit on there. Like, I got Fat Joe. Who's on it? Fat Joe, Bun B, and McGruff. I got a joint with Raekwon. Young Buck, was it Raekwon, Young Buck, and J-Rock.
Wow.
Like, so, I got flamers.
And
people around me, that heard they were like, yo, slay. They not ready for this shit.
You need that Desi Dez, like, freestyle, though.
That's right.
Nah, man, I'm fucking up with that.
Track 21.
And the craziest shit is my intro to album, the freestyle I got, and it's so hard. It opens up with the Outlaws.
Wow.
Yep. Edie, I mean, him and Noble, they fucking, yo, they so destroyed it.
There's not it's a section of this country that you have not, like, asked touched, to be a part of this.
Nah, and it's strange because, you know, it's a lot of people on my album that a lot of people wouldn't put on projects because, you know, they feel like it's not popping, but...
Right, Mac Miller is so hard to work with.
Exactly. Like, and then, yeah, I got another record with, who I got on this record? I got Razzcass, Terminology, Mr. Fab, Loaded Lux, OMP. Like, this is a straight, this one is a straight no.
Bars.
I got a female artist I'm working with named Miss Hustle, who's really coming up. She's
the first lady of Street Stunting.
That's right. I hope you have a good lawyer who can, like, make sure that all the agreements are in place, because that's a lot of paperwork.
But just think about every album I had was like that.
Yeah.
You understand? It's really about the relationships, because in this game, what you got to understand is the lawyers work for the artist. And once you are on a certain level, like Kendrick Lamar can't be told what he's not going to do by the label. Like, come on. Like, right. You understand what I'm saying? Rick Ross can't be told, yo, you're not. They tell the label who they want to clear and who they don't. So anytime an artist say the label don't want to clear some shit, that means they don't want to clear. You right. understand what I'm yeah. saying? Like, yeah. I know. You know what I'm saying? As far as a artist who's stamped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did anybody not clear their shit?
No, I'm going through clearances now, but I've never in my career had a problem not getting something cleared. And I'm going to be honest with you. If somebody was to really try to handle me greasy like that or whatever, I'm going to put the fucking record out anyway and just can't make no money off of it. It's that simple. Like, yeah. it'll be promo for the internet.
Sure.
That's yeah. all. It won't be no loss. It won't be no, I'm not losing. Like, so I'm not really stressing. All right, you don't want to clear it. You going, all right, remember that. You know, but I've never had nobody, and I had records with Eminem on down. Like, yeah. I've never had nobody not clear a record from me.
Did Eminem give you the nail in the coffin freestyle first?
Yeah.
Or the diss at Benzino and the sauce?
I had the Western Air joint. What was that? The Hail Mary joint?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. I put Busta on it.
Right.
You did?
Yeah.
Because Violator. Yeah.
Yeah, Busta wasn't on it. And I remember that because Green Lantern was going to had the other version on his tape. So when he heard Busta was on it, he tried to call Paul Rosenberg and tried to have him call me. And I never forget, rest in peace, Chris Lighty was like, yo, don't answer your phone until after midnight. I'm like, why? He said, because Green Lantern, you ran your mouth. He got whiffed that Busta's on it and they trying to shut it down. I was like, okay. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't, shit. It was trying to stop that. But yeah, I put Busta Rhymes on that version.
Do you know why he called Ja Beatrice in that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, nobody does, yeah. So we can figure it out.
An amazing verse.
Maybe somebody will comment.
An amazing diss. That whole thing was just like...
Yeah, that whole record was just incredible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, but those was good times in the hip-hop, you know.
Oh, my God.
Battling shit and everything. I had a good time with that.
It'll come back, though, right? Like, everybody's, like, friends now, but I feel like, no?
No, I can't come back now, and that's almost why I don't really... like cater to the Drama King moniker anymore, because let's not forget what this culture is about. It's talent. And it's so many untalented motherfuckers now.
You're talking to two of them. Yeah.
I mean, no. But when somebody says something, instead of them saying, okay, motherfucker, you said that, and go and get a mic, they want to go get a gun.
Right.
You want to get a knife, you want to back. I'm not advocating no fucking violence, because that's not what this is about. And if you're not talented, then don't get into altercations where you want to get violent with it, because it's not helping the culture. Like, if you going to be an MC or you consider yourself a rapper, you got to be ready for when people want to come compete against you. And violence is not the way. When did that shit happen? When did Melly Mel and them try to kill Cold Crush?
Right.
When did Force MDs and shit try to kill the Fantastic Five? Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck? Like, you understand? When did this shit come into play? The internet play? Because now I feel like before you could hear the person calling you bitch ass nigga. Now you can see them doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It fucks with you. Or, you know, your girl or, you know, a family member could be like, oh, I see so-and-so calling you a bitch ass nigga. So now the whole rap situation went out the window. It has nothing to do with rap no more. Now it's personal.
Right.
How'd that happen? See, so that we can never have no great battles come back unless it consists of brothers like, you know, Kendrick or J. Cole or, you know, like brothers like that you know, ain't really trying to lose what they have over ego.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a lot of these brothers that really come from the street and the only way they know is violence, it's going to be violence.
The only time there should be violence in this culture is when K-Slay is in that tunnel and someone's coming with cans and you have your baseball bat.
Time to go. Time to go.
K-Slay, you don't understand what an honor it is to have you up here. And we so appreciate it. And we're, you know, we're finally going to get that drop.
That's right. Yeah, finally. It's about time.
I got you.
Thanks so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's The Real. Jeff, if people want to find out more about this podcast of ours, this thing of ours, where can they go?
You can always go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are also on Spotify and Google Play and hopefully whatever service you are using. Otherwise, you know, I don't know what to tell you. We're also on Twitter at It's the Real, Instagram at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real. If you ever want to find us on Snapchat, we don't really update there much anymore, but
yeah, we're Instagram guys. Listen, it's come to this, guys. Snapchat's a wrap.
Okay. Well, so is Facebook Story.
Oh, but that
literally
never,
nobody I know used it.
That never came to be. But
anyway, we're on Instagram at on Snapchat.
We're everywhere.
It's the Real and It's the Real Eric. Do not follow It's the Real on Snapchat.
Here's something I want to make very clear. Go to Spotify right now and follow It's the Real. You can find all of our music there and future music there. And it is very important that you guys follow us on Spotify. Go there now. Here's something we're trying to do. We're trying to grow this podcast. We want to really blow it out and make sure that this is getting to all the ears it needs to get to. So that starts with us. Jeff, do you have a friend you want to tell about this podcast?
Yeah, I met this kid, Joe Vango. That's not his real name, but that's what he goes by.
Sure.
Joe Vango, he came up from Philly and walked around the Upper West Side with me for like an hour.
Nice. Yeah, good guy.
Good guy. Good enough to hang out with him for an hour, more.
Very nice.
But yeah, super nice guy, super driven guy. He's like 22 and coming up.
I, the other night, was hanging out with one of my college roommates, Jimmy Smith from Syracuse. He was in town. And I jumped on a local train down at 59th Street, Columbus Circle.
You ride the train?
The limousine was in the shop. But for this night, I jumped on the local train, and I was stopped by a dude who introduced himself as a huge fan of the podcast. His name is DJ Mills. He's from Baltimore. And he wanted to come up, he told me, for the SOB show, but wasn't able to come up. He hates his job, and we help him get through the day. And that is the best compliment. Shout out to DJ Mills from Baltimore, who was listening to the Tuxedo episode on the ride up from Baltimore, and great dude, really excited about the podcast, and I'm very glad that we can pass the time.
Yes, leave your shitty job.
That's right. Thanks again for listening, guys. Please go tell a friend about this podcast. Not for real, for real.
Not for real, for real.
We will see you next week.